Hola, it's my great pleasure to introduce Hong Yan. Am I pronouncing it correctly? Hong Yan?
Yeah, that's right.
He's a graduate student at UC San Diego and studying under Yijun. And he has done interesting works previously on machine learning and photography and so on, among many others. Today, he will tell us about predicting the many properties of chaotic dynamics.
Okay, thanks, Benny, for the introduction and giving me this opportunity to talk about our recent results on predicting many properties of quantum system with chaotic dynamics. So it's a collaborative work I done with my mentor, Dr. Yizhong Yu, and my collaborator, Dr. Suwen Choi. So I hope after this talk, you will find those new results interesting and exciting. So before I talk about predicting properties of quantum state, I want to first review what is quantum state tomography. So a full quantum state tomography aims to reconstruct a complete classical representation of the quantum state, which is a density matrix from the repetitive measurement on identical copy of the quantum system. And the quantum state tomography is an essential task in many quantum technology applications, for example, quantum device benchmarking and also discrimination of quantum state. However, the full quantum state tomography is not an easy task. So by naively counting the number of elements inside its density matrix, one can speculate the number of measurements we need in order to fully figure out the density matrix is going to scale exponentially. And that is indeed the case. So the full quantum state tomography is not scalable. However, in most of the cases, we don't care about a number of specific elements inside the density matrix, but we would rather want to predict the properties of the underlying quantum state. For example, in variational quantum eigensolver, we want to predict the expectation value of the energy, or in condensed matter physics, we probe some local or non-local order parameter to predict the quantum phase of matter. And in state preparation, we want to predict quantum fidelity. And more recently, in efficient machine learning of quantum many-body physics, we provide the classical data to the artificial intelligence, and we want the AI to predict the property for us. So as we can see, predicting many properties of a quantum system by a few measurements is an essential task, appearing not only in quantum information technology, but also in condensed matter physics, material science as well. So if you are not interested in a full quantum state tomography, but rather predicting some relevant type of observables, the tomography scheme can be made more efficient, especially based on the statistical learning theory. Last year, Huang Kun and Preskill proposed a classical shadow tomography. So from a bird's eye view, the classical shadow tomography contains two parts. The first part is the quantum experiment, and the second part is a classical post-processing, a classical computer. And then with the data we collected, we can efficiently predict many properties of quantum state. For example, quantum fidelity, entanglement entropy, some local and non-local observables. So one nice thing about this new tomography scheme is the provable efficiency. For example, people can prove if this unitary ensemble achieves a global higher unitary condition, then the number of measurements we need in order to predict the quantum fidelity doesn't scale with the number of qubits in the system. So that is quite amazing. However, one may ask, this constant scaling in estimating quantum fidelity is impressive, but why do we need random mass measurements for other cases? If we know what we want to measure, why don't we just measure them directly? So let me give you another motivation why classical shadow tomography is really powerful. So the magic of random mass measurement, or the classical shadow tomography, comes from the predictive power. There are cases where the classical shadow tomography is very useful. So first, if we have m linear properties OI that we want to measure, one can choose to measure them one by one. Then the number of measurements we need in order to specify those m linear property at least are going to scale as OM. However, with classical shadow tomography, one can use data cleverly and people can prove the sample complexity becomes log OM, O log M. So that is quite impressive. And that is indeed the case for using the variational quantum circuits to solve quantum many body problems or molecular problems. And in those cases, people need to estimate expectation value of many poly operators. The second case is during the classical post-processing, it offers us to do operations that are not easy to perform in experiments. For example, recently by combining the error correction code with the classical shadow tomography, we propose this new efficient quantum error mitigation method by projecting out non-logical errors in the classical post-processing. So thirdly, it's with this quantum classical interface, it is very suitable for the unsupervised machine learning problems. For example, in unsupervised machine, like a quantum phase classification, if the quantum simulator achieves some exotic quantum phase beyond the classical simulation regime, probably we don't know what is the order parameter to measure in parallel, then the classical shadows serve as an unbiased database for the underlying quantum state. And with this efficient quantum classical interface, we can do the unsupervised machine learning or representational learning to figure out the quantum phase of matter. And even if there are cases people know what are the order parameters to like measure, unsupervised machine learning may provide an opportunity to find a better order parameters. So that is quite amazing. Oh, I hear a question, please.
Yes, can you explain a little bit where the non-logical errors, like what are examples of them and where they come from?
Oh, this one, okay. Yeah, great question. So in this scheme, we can use any quantum error correction we like, for example, the Torrey code or like a 513 code and whatever code. And then we encode this valuable logical information by many physical qubits. And instead of doing the active error correction, we just let the quantum chip run the experiments. And there will be some noise errors in this quantum process. And at the end of the quantum process, instead of getting a perfect readout, we have a noisy state. So that is an epsilon rho. And then like this epsilon rho will be like the perfect state we want to prepare, plus our superposition with some like noisy states, where, for example, in the Torrey code case, you can have some local perturbation add on that. So the error mitigation is that we can project this noisy state onto the ground state manifold or the logical subspace. Then this will be like serve as a purification of the noisy state. And that will give you the correct answer or error mitigated error. I hope this answers your question.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the question. Okay, so first let me briefly review the data acquisition protocol in the classical shadow tomography. So in the quantum experiments, we have an ensemble of unitary channels. And each time in experiments, we prepare the underlying quantum state. And then we randomly select a unitary channel from this ensemble of unitaries to evolve this quantum state. So after the quantum evolution, rho will become rho prime. And then in the second step, we take a computational basis, z-basis measurement. And after the measurement, this quantum state will collapse to a product state, which can be labeled by a b-string. So I will use type B to denote this readout. And then the third step is a classical post-processing. So on a classical computer, we calculate the back evolution of this b-string state into the original basis. And this sigma hat is what we call the classical shadow. So equivalently, we can think we are doing some complicated projective measurements directly on the underlying quantum state. And this projective operator is the z-basis operator back evolution into the original space. And after this projective measurement, the quantum state will collapse to a classical shadow. So there are some probabilities associated with each of the classical shadow data. And now let me explain where are the probability involved. First of all, in the quantum evolutional part, we choose a unitary channel to evolve this quantum state. The probability of choosing a particular U is associated with a P of U. And then after the quantum evolution, we take a computational basis measurement. The state will collapse to a particular B string state, cat B. The probability of having this cat B state is from the Born's rule, that is a trace between the cat B with the rho prime. And after some derivation, this can be rewritten as a trace between the classical shadow with the underlying quantum state. Then the final probability associated with a particular classical shadow is a product of those two. So the data set we have is a set of classical shadows. And each of the classical shadow is associated with a probability that depending on the underlying quantum state rho. So now we have the data set. That is the data set of classical shadows. And we know the distribution of the data set depends on the underlying state information. So the question is, how do we recover the original state rho from this data set? So here in the cartoon, I plotted density matrix of GHC state. So on the four corners, we have 0.5, and all the other elements are zero. And after the data acquisition protocol, we have a set of the classical shadows. So here I plotted five examples of classical shadows. Each of them can be represented as a matrix, the same size as the density matrix. So the question is, how do we use those classical shadows to reconstruct these underlying state information? So if we take an average of the data set we have, we know that each of the classical shadows is associated with a probability that depending on the underlying state information. So from here, we can see that the average of classical shadow is linked through the underlying state rho through a linear map. So we will call this linear map the measurement channel. And in addition, if this U2 ensemble is tomography complete, then this channel is invertible, such that there exists another linear map, M inverse, acting on the average of classical shadow, and we will recover the underlying state information rho. So we will call this M inverse channel the reconstruction map. For example, if we have the M inverse channel, we can act in that on each of the classical shadow. And once we take an average, we see the underlying state will appear. So the reconstruction map is a foundation in the classical shadow tomography. We can use that to predict many properties of quantum state. For example, we can use that to reconstruct the underlying density matrix if we want. We can use that to predict linear properties of the underlying state. By replacing this rho with the M inverse channel acting on the classical shadow. And more powerfully, we can use that to predict nonlinear properties which are not easy to measure directly in experiment. For example, the second Ring entropy. So as we can see, the reconstruction map is the foundation of the classical shadow tomography in predicting the quantum property. However, figuring out this reconstruction map is not an easy task. So previously, there are two known cases where we know what's the reconstruction map. Now let me briefly review that. The first known case is the global Haar unitary ensemble, where this unitary ensemble satisfies the global Haar property. So the measurement channel and the reconstruction map is simply a fine transformation of the density matrix. Since this unitary ensemble achieves the maximum information scrambling power, it's very suitable to predict non-local and low rank observables such as quantum fidelity. However, it's challenging to experimentally realize a global Haar unitary ensemble because that usually requires very deep circuits. The second known case is a local Haar unitary design, the local Haar random unitary. So each of the qubits doesn't interact with each other, and each of the green blocks satisfy a local Haar property. So this scheme can be easily achieved in experiments since it only requires single qubit gates. And it's very suitable to predict local properties such as a local correlation function. However, there is no information scrambling in the circuit ensemble, so it will be inefficient to use this scheme to predict non-local properties such as quantum fidelity. So as we can see, those two schemes are extreme limits between the maximum information scrambling and the no information scrambling at all. It would be very natural to ask, is there any scheme that can serve a nice interpolation between those two limits? It'd be so nice to have a flexible circuit design such that we can adapt the unitary ensemble to the target observable we want to predict. And also applying deep circuits is not feasible in the nearest term quantum technology. It'd be so nice to have this flexible circuits such that we can use shallow circuits or even Hamiltonian dynamics without time-dependent control to do the shadow tomography and predict the quantum properties. So the design of a flexible circuit design have two goals. First, we want this unitary ensemble can be true freely such that we can optimize the sample efficiency to the target physical observable. And the second goal is easy implementation, such that we can use shallow circuits or even Hamiltonian dynamics to do the shadow tomography. And as we said before, the challenge is to figure out this reconstruction channel for arbitrary unit ensemble. And that is a non-trivial task to calculate. So in order to make some progresses, we combine the idea of classic shadow tomography with chaotic quantum dynamics. So particular in the following, I'm going to introduce two of our recent work. The first one is based on the chaotic dynamics driven by generic GOE Hamiltonian. And the other one will focus on more on the local gates and local Hamiltonian models. So first, let's take a look at the Hamiltonian-driven shadow tomography. So in this scheme, the unitary channel or the time evolutional operator generated by generic quantum chaotic Hamiltonians, and that is usually modeled by the GOE Hamiltonian. So we choose the age from GOE ensemble. So the Hamiltonian is like a random variable, and the unitary channel U will be the e to the minus iht. So here t is the evolutional time that we can choose freely. So if this t approaches to zero, then the unitary channel will be identity. There will be no information scrambling. By doing directly z basis measurement on the underlying quantum state, we're directly probing the diagonal information of the underlying density matrix. So the measurement channel is just to simply select the diagonal part of the density matrix. And on the other limit, if t approaches to infinity, to the leading order, this ensemble of unitary achieves the global hard limit. It scrambles information maximally. The measurement channel is the same as a global hard unitary ensemble. So there is no difference between the off-diagonal part information and the diagonal part of the information. So here, rho O is off-diagonal of the density matrix, and this rho D is a diagonal traceless part. So naturally, we can speculate the measurement channel for an intermediate time will be an interpolation between those two limits. So here, we have some time-dependent coefficient alpha and beta associated with the off-diagonal part and diagonal part of the density matrix. So in the paper, we theoretically derived the measurement channel explicitly, and we proved that is indeed the case. So it will take this form. And those coefficients alpha and beta can be determined by the spectrum form factor of the GOE Hamiltonian. So it's a complicated form, so I will skip the details of that. So now we have the measurement channel. It contains three parts, the identity parts, the off-diagonal parts, and the diagonal traceless parts. Since those three parts are all orthogonal with each other, the inverse channel can be simply obtained by inverting the coefficient of each of the term. So now we have this reconstruction map. This is by inverting the coefficient, this is the reconstruction channel. Then we can use that to predict the properties. For example, if we want to predict linear properties, we can replace a density matrix rho with M inverse acting on each of the classical shadow. So this will give us a one-shot estimation of this linear property O. And we know the expectation value of this single-shot estimation will converge to the true expectation value of this linear property O. However, in reality, we can only perform a finite amount of measurements, for example, M times. And we use this mean estimator to estimate the true expectation value. So this, in practice, this mean estimator will have some statistical fluctuation around the expectation value. So how good is this mean estimation using a finite amount of data? So mathematically, the probability of this mean estimator being the epsilon range, of the epsilon range is controlled by the variance of single shot variance and the total amount of measurements we have M. So as we can see, if the single shot estimation have a really small variance, then we don't need a lot of data to have a really accurate prediction of this property. However, if the single shot estimation have a really large variance, then we really need a lot of data to suppress this deviation. So the small variance means small sample complexity, and the large variance means a large sample complexity. Since it's a single shot, variance depends on the physical quantity O we want to predict. So one can define a shadow norm operator of O that upper bounds the variance independent of the underlying quantum state rho. And this shadow norm serves as an indicator of the sample complexity in predicting quantum properties. So in this paper, we theoretically calculate this shadow norm for the off-diagonal observables and diagonal observables. And they both take the form as a trace of O squared times some time-dependent function, which we'll call them the dynamic form factors. So as a reminder, if this dynamic form factor equals to one, then this trace O squared will be the shadow norm for the O operator in the global hard limit. So this dynamic form factor serves as like a sample complexity indicator in the unit of the sample complexity of a global hard shadow tomography scheme. So if this dynamic form factor is larger than one, meaning that the global hard shadow tomography is better. However, if this dynamic form factor is smaller than one, it means there is the advantage of using the Hamiltonian-driven shadow tomography scheme. So in general, we find these dynamic form factors take a really complicated time-dependent form. But for the Pauli observables, they have a really interesting behavior. So now let me just focus on the Pauli observables and show you the results. First, let's take a look at the off-diagonal Pauli observables. The dynamic form factor will diverge as t approaches zero. This is because it's impossible to infer the off-diagonal information from the computational basis measurement in absence of any information scrambling. However, as time evolves, this off-diagonal information gets scrambled to the diagonal part, such that we can infer the off-diagonal information from the computational z-basis measurement. And this form factor decays really quickly. And after a characteristic time, it approaches to one. So in Hamiltonian-driven shadow tomography scheme, one only needs to wait a scrambling time to achieve the same efficiency as a global hard shadow tomography in terms of predicting off-diagonal observables. And for the diagonal observables, the dynamic form factor has more interesting behavior. First of all, it's of order 2 to the minus n when t approaches to zero. This is because the computational basis measurement directly probing the diagonal information of the density matrix. So that is why it requires really very few samples compared to a general purpose shadow tomography scheme. And as time evolves, this diagonal information also slowly scrambles to the off-diagonal information. And before this form factor saturates to the long time value one, we observe there are some interesting behavior, like it periodically peaks at a particular time. So we will call this phenomenon the scrambling bits. So how long does this scrambling bits last will actually depend on the system size. It will actually last to the 2 to the n over 6 power. So for a really large system size, the time scale between the scrambling time of the off-diagonal form factor and the vanishing time of the scrambling bits are well separated, such that we can utilize this yellow window to achieve a better prediction of the diagonal information, while the off-diagonal information will serve at the same efficiency compared to the global hard unitary ensemble. So this is really nice. And this practical advantage can only be utilized if we have this flexible circuit design. So the lesson we learned in the Hamiltonian-driven shadow tomography is that time and tunable unitary channel are our friend, and we can use those flexible circuit design to achieve a better prediction in adaptation to the target observables. For example, we can use those yellow time window to achieve a better prediction of the diagonal information while the off-diagonal observables maintain the same efficiency. However, go ahead.
Okay, thanks. On your previous slide, I am curious, because of these bits, the periodicity shown, I can't quite read it off the scale, but it is something it's not one of these integer multiples of t. Do you know what it is and like any significance?
I see.
Like, it's just so curious how they kind of merge back up there.
Great question. So actually, the peak appears at the zero point of the Bessel function. And what is a Bessel function? It's actually determined by the spectrum form factor of the GOE Hamiltonian. It's basically rooted from here. It's basically half of the zero point of this G1 function. So why this periodic like scrambling bit happen? It's actually because this Hamiltonian family have a finite spectrum factor, then it will appear periodically. Yeah, go ahead.
Thanks for the clarification.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Oh, okay. Yeah, if there's no question, then let's go ahead. It's a very excellent question. Okay, so far we have been talking about using the generic chaotic Hamiltonians, the GOE Hamiltonians, to do the shadow tomography. However, the GOE Hamiltonian is still a global Hamiltonian, which is not trivial to implement in experiments. So to take a further step, we'll focus on finite depths, the shallow circuits, or even the local random Hamiltonian-driven dynamics. So first, let's take a moment to think about what are the differences between those circuit ensembles. So if we apply those circuit ensembles to a product state, which are labeled by those right triangle, the entanglement pattern created by those circuit ensemble will be different. For example, if this unitary ensemble achieves a global hard unitary ensemble, then the final state will be page state. And the entanglement, they will possess a volume law entanglement. However, if this unitary ensemble achieves the local hard property, then the qubits don't interact with each other. The final state will still be a product state. So there's no entanglement between any two parts of the system. And in general, if we have a shallow circuit, the entanglement pattern created by those shallow circuits will in general between those two limits. So we realize maybe entanglement property of the circuits play an important role in determining those reconstruction map. And we prove this intuition is indeed case for a large family of unitary ensembles. And it's really nice to see that under this new formulation, it naturally links the study of quantum dynamics with the quantum state tomography. So the assumption we make is the unitary ensemble is locally scrambled, meaning that after this quantum dynamics, the original basis in, dependent information will be forgotten, meaning that we can apply any local basis transformation VI at the beginning of the evolution, and the ensemble average of those two will be the same. More rigorously, that means the distribution of this unitary channel obeys the right local basis invariance, such that PU equals to PU times V, where this V is a tensor product of local basis transformation. So this assumption applies to a large family of unitary ensembles, including random unitary circuits and also quantum Browning dynamics. Let's figure out what is the reconstruction map under this local scrambling assumption. First of all, the reconstruction map will still be a linear map. Now we have another piece of information, such that it should only contain basis independent information. For example, the entanglement entropy, because the basis dependent information will be washed out under this local scrambling assumption. Then the reconstruction map is in general can be written as a linear combination of the reduced classical shadows. So here sigma A is a reduced classical shadow on region A. And here in the cartoon, I plotted some region choices for four sites. And in principle, there are exponentially many choices for region A. And in addition, this linear coefficient RA only depends on the entanglement information. Now let me tell you, what entanglement information do we need? So suppose initially we have a product state, and then we apply this unitary ensemble to the product state. And after the quantum evolution, the sigma state will possess the entanglement. And we can calculate the second Ren'e entropy of this sigma state of all the region and raise them to the exponential. So this vector is what we call the second entanglement feature of this sigma state. And this entanglement feature vector specifies the entanglement pattern created by this unitary ensemble. So in the paper, we show that this entanglement feature vector is all the information we need in order to specify the reconstruction map. Particularly, we only need to solve a linear constraint equation. So here RA is a coefficient we want to solve. This W2 is the entanglement feature vector. And this FADC is a constant fusion factor only depending on the local Hilbert space dimension, small d. Okay, so the contribution of our work is that we proposed a new formulation to calculate the reconstruction map. And under this new formulation, it's very nice to see the only information we need is the entanglement pattern created by this Yunter ensemble. So as a summary of the protocol, first we want to figure out the entanglement feature vector created by this Yunter ensemble. And then we only need to solve a linear constraint equation to find this coefficient RA. And then the reconstruction map is fully specified by this coefficient RA. So I would like to mention that in the study of quantum dynamics, people have figured out the efficient method to calculate the entanglement feature instead of doing the simulation. So it's very nice to see that this new formulation bridges the study of quantum dynamics with the quantum state tomography. So as a first example, we use a brick wall structure randomly for gates as a demonstration. So each of the green blocks satisfy a unitary three design. So if we insert any local basis transformation, it will be absorbed into this green block. So this unitary ensemble satisfy our local scrambling condition rigorously. So previously, we don't know how to do the reconstruction using the classical shadow collected on this finite depth shallow circuits. Now we can use this shallow circuits to do the shadow tomography. So numerically, we use this finite depth shallow circuits to do the reconstruction of a JGZ state. So how good is the reconstruction? In order to quantify it, we predict the quantum fidelity between the underlying quantum state rho with the reconstructed density matrix rho construct. If this reconstruction is successful, then this fidelity will become one. So here in the figure, different color means the different system size simulation. And as we can see, the prediction of the quantum fidelity is all equals to one. That indicates our new formulation will always give us the unbiased reconstruction, no matter how many layers we have in the shadow circuits. So this is quite amazing. And in addition to the mean value, we also care about the variance of the prediction. Because this statistical fluctuation indicates the sample complexity. So suppose if this L approaches to zero, this circuit ensemble approaches the local Ha unitary ensemble. And from previous literature, we know it will have a really bad scaling in predicting the quantum fidelity, and it actually will scale exponentially. So here the blue dots of the simulation results is indicated in the simulation down in the local Ha limit. And as we see, the error bar grows dramatically if we increase the system size. And in the inside, the blue line indicates sample complexity, and indeed, it's an exponential growth. And if this L approaches to infinity, in the really deep circuits, this unitary ensemble achieves a global Ha unitary ensemble. And from previous literature, we know this is the optimal bound, such that it will have a constant sample complexity in predicting quantum fidelity. And the numerical results indicated by the green dots is done in the global Ha limit. And as we can see, the green error bar doesn't grow if we increase the system size, and the green line stays constant. So it's very natural to ask what will happen in the shadow circuit region. So if we just apply three layers to do the shadow tomography and predict the quantum fidelity, that is the results indicated by the red dots. And as we see, the red error bar doesn't grow really much if we increase the system size, and this green line is almost flat. So this indicates there is a great advantage in reducing the sample complexity, even for a few layers. And that also motivate us to study the sample complexity scaling with a number of layers. So here I plot the variance of the fidelity prediction as a function of the layers. As a reminder, this variance directly indicates the sample complexity. As we can see, the sample complexity of predicting quantum fidelity decreased really fast in the shallow circuit region. And we actually found an empirical formula that kind of fits our data really well. And this empirical formula indicates the sample complexity decreased faster than the exponential function in the shallow circuit region. And it speaks for the advantage of applying shallow circuits to do the shadow tomography. And using shadow tomography to do the shadow tomography is only possible because of our new formulation. So far, that is the prediction of the low rank observable, the quantum fidelity. Now let's shift to a full rank observable, for example, the poly observables. I'll mainly focus on the poly Z operators because the different basis choice do not matter much. And I will use the length K to indicate locality of this operator. So as before, let's first try to understand those two limits. So if this L approaches to zero, then this is a local hard limit. And we know that the sample complexity is going to, depending on the locality of the operator we want to predict, it will actually scale as 2 to the K, where K is the locality of this operator. So in the numerical simulation, we indeed see this exponential scaling. So here, different color means different locality of the this poly operator. And in the ultra deep limit, this ensemble will achieve the global high limit. And since in the global high limit, there is no difference between local and non-local. So all the observable will have the same sample complexity that is proportional to the total Hilbert space dimension D. So as we can see in the numerical results, we choose a deep layer, not very deep, but as we can see, all the sample complexity will converge to the same level. So very naturally, we can speculate in the intermedium region, the sample complexity will serve as a smooth interpolation between those two limits. And indeed, we confirm this speculation. And more amazingly, we observe for non-local observables, the sample complexity will decrease faster than the exponential function in the shallow circuit region. So that means the marginal gain of using deep circuit is very low. And using a shallow circuit already gives you a really good performance compared to a global hard unitary ensemble. So far we have been focused on engineered brick wall structure random cleaver gates. However, realizing those two local random cleaver gates may still not be easy for some of the quantum platform. For example, in the radiover item based quantum simulator, the laser detuning and the intensity is easier to tune. So we want to take a further step to see more realistic local Hamiltonian, whether those more realistic local Hamiltonian can generate unitary dynamics that approximate this local scrambling assumption, and whether we can use that to predict properly and do the shallow tomography. Especially, we focus on the unitary evolution generated by a local Hamiltonian for a finite amount of time t. And the Hamiltonian family we focus on is the disordered quantum spin model. So here, the GIG is a quench disorder between the nearest neighbor coupling, and we choose this GIG from a uniform distribution. And we also have a uniform magnetic field in the XY plane and with a random angle at different pi. So the total unitary channel will be e to the minus, the product of e to the minus IHT. So this practical ensemble is easier to achieve in experiments. The question is, does this practical unitary ensemble satisfy the local scrambling assumption? And how do we characterize it? So in order to characterize it, we propose the local frame potential as a distance between the practical ensemble and its local basis invariant limit. So if this local frame potential gap is zero, it means it will satisfy the local scrambling condition. And we numerically calculate this local frame potential gap for the different coupling strings. And as we can see at the beginning of the quantum evolution, they all have a finite gap, indicating there is a bias in the unitary ensemble. However, as time increases, this gap decrease exponentially, indicating it will approach to the local basis invariant limit really fast. And after a short period of time, they all saturate to a plateau with a really small value. That indicates it's already locally scrambled. So more amazingly, we find one fixed quantity-ordered spin chain can already achieve a really low local frame potential gap. So here, the pink line is the frame potential gap calculated with one fixed quantity-ordered quantum spin chain under the random rotating magnetic field. And this red solid line is the ensemble average. So this result indicates it's already good to use one single Hamiltonian to generate a local scrambling, approximate local scrambling unit ensemble. So then we use a single quantity disorder quantum spin model to perform the shadow tomography and predict quantum fidelity. As we can see initially, before the local scrambling condition is reached, the prediction of the fidelity is biased. And after this local scrambling condition is satisfied, this prediction will become unbiased. So in practice, we only need to wait for a short period of time for this local scrambling condition to be satisfied. And then we can use a single Hamiltonian to perform approximate shadow tomography, which is really amazing. So as a summary, the shadow tomography is a great tool. We can use that to predict many properties of quantum states by doing very few measurements. However, finding those reconstruction map for arbitrary unit ensemble is really hard. So in order to solve this problem, we combine idea with of the classical shadow tomography with chaotic quantum dynamics. Especially, we proposed a new formulation, the Hamiltonian-driven shadow tomography and the Hamiltonian the classical shadow tomography with locally scrambled quantum dynamics. It's very natural, very nice to see under this new formulation, it naturally bridges the study of quantum dynamics with the quantum state tomography, and those schemes serve as a nice interpolation between the global hard and local hard limits. We see the information scrambling will assist the quantum measurements. And the more, and additionally, it is experimental friendly because we can use shallow circuits or even local Hamiltonian dynamics without time-dependent fine-tuning to do the shadow tomography. Last but not least, with this flexible circuit design, we can adapt the unit ensemble to the target observable we want to predict to achieve a better efficiency. So with that, I will thank my collaborator, my mentor, Dr. Yichong Yu, my collaborator, so on, and all the other friends gave me nice discussion during my research. So since I'm looking for a postdoc position, before I end my talk, I want to briefly mention my other works. So in quantum information and computation, I've also done some work on the quantum machine learning. Especially recently, we have interpretable quantum advantage in quantum neural sequence modeling. So we prove there is a large family of continuous variable quantum computation that can perform the natural language translation that is superior to any classical model. And also by combining idea of a classical shadow tomography and error correction code, we propose a new error mitigation method. And I've also done some work on differential programming of the isometric tensor network. And for the quantum algorithms, I've designed some what we call the resonant quantum search with the monic qubits with my colleague. And also I've done some machine learning, especially the machine learning holography, to use some machine learning as a technique to decode the holography duality for rise field theory and also the holograph QCD. And I also initiated a new study of studying hierarchical representation of the human face using the renormalization group. And in quantum antibody physics, we've designed something we call a strong spectrum bifurcation renormalization group as an efficient classical algorithm to simulate a strong disorder quantum antibody problems. And then we use that to study the interplay between the topology and the strong disorder. So with this, I will conclude my talk. Thank you for your attention. And is there any questions?
Thanks for the great talk.
Thank you.
So I guess let me add that for faculty members, if you are interested in chatting with him later, you can still sign up to arrange a meeting. That being said, if you have any question, please speak up. So I have a probably few questions. So you mentioned that bringing the circuit size larger and larger, L, and then for the large non-local operators, the improvement was like faster than exponential. Yeah. Why is that possible? Or
I see. So here for the full rank operator, we observe this non-local operator will decay faster than the exponential function, this sample complexity. And also we also observed for this low rank operator, it appears to have the same faster than exponential behavior. And this empirical formula, when I found it, I have a physical picture in my mind that there are some information scrambling and it may have a light cone or diffusive. So because of the operator growth, any local measurement in the Z basis will become a non-local operator, and the effective size of the system will be reduced. It will be reduced to N over L to some power. And if it's a ballistic process, this alpha will be one. If it's diffusive, it'll be like 1/2. But however, actually, I don't know why it's stayed between those two limits. So it's 0.7. And that's a physical intuition, but I don't know a way that I can rigorously prove. Maybe for some more structure that people can solve explicitly. Yeah.
Okay. Any other question? Yes.
I see. Yeah, go ahead.
So it is not specific to the talk, but I wonder if there is any thought in applying or merging some of the techniques with the shadow method with, say, error correction / error mitigation itself. There are two directions. One is when people want to do fault-tolerant quantum computation, can we use shadow method to minimize the resource? That's one side of the question. The other side is when you perform this kind of quantum machine learning, what can you do to mitigate noise? I mean, both are big questions. I just wonder whether you have thought about either direction.
I see. Yeah, excellent question. So let me move to the last slides I have. So here is a very small figure. So for the first question, by combining the classical shadow tomography with a quantum error correction code, I don't know whether there is a way to reduce the resources we need for the full, fault tolerant quantum computation. So that is an open question. But for error mitigation, I'm certain there is a way. And currently, we are wrapping up this paper. So the idea is we have some quantum error correction code. For example, each of the logical qubit is encoded by a 513 code, and we have multiple logical qubit. And instead of doing the this active error correction, which will need Ancilla qubit, we don't need Ancilla qubit. We just do the computation. So at the end of the quantum computation, then you have some non-logical errors like local perturbations. It will be a superposition of noisy state and ideal state. And then with the shadow tomography, you can actually do this projection very efficiently in the post-processing, such that, for example, if you don't mitigate any error, it will actually be a straight line. I didn't show it here, but the slope is 3/4. And with this projection, this value will be mitigated, meaning that the fidelity will be higher. So this in the y-axis is the infidelity. So it's 1 minus the fidelity of the state. So as you can see, it will have a larger pseudo threshold. I call it the pseudo threshold because this is not a thermodynamic limit results, but the pseudo threshold is for our proposal is become 0.5 of the depolarizing channel. So which is I think quite amazing. And it's one of the applications I can find for the nearest term quantum computation combined with the classical shadow tomography. Thank you for the question.
Can I ask a quick follow-up about this? With your error mitigation method you propose, what's the kind of overhead in terms of the number of quantum circuits you'd have to run? So you want to mitigate a specific quantum circuit, but how many extra runs do you have to do?
Yeah, great question. So first of all, the first overhead, in order to use quantum error correction code, we need extra physical qubit. Mm-hmm. That is one overhead. The other overhead is after the this quantum computation, you need to attach some quantum circuits, for example, the shadow brick wall circuits, to do the shadow tomography and do the computation measurement in the Z basis. Those are the two overheads in the quantum hardware.
Thanks.
Yeah, great question.
Any other question?
Yeah, somewhat basic question. So I think you defined some quantity called frame potential distance, right? I couldn't understand that. Yeah, I mean, how is this quantity defined? Like,
I see. Yeah, so it's inspired by the frame potential for the global hard case. So, suppose you have a ensemble of interest, and you want to characterize whether it will satisfy a global hard property, then people can propose a frame potential as a quantity, so it satisfies a certain value, then it's satisfies the global hard property. So this local frame potential is similar. It's basically meaning that first you have a practical unitary ensemble, and then so that is ensemble A, and then you have another ensemble B, which is the ensemble you have by attaching the local basis transformation. So that is ensemble B satisfy this assumption rigorously. And then you compare the difference between those ensembles. And basically, that's the idea of a local frame potential.
I see. Yeah, just one more question was, so this relation between variance and sample complexity, I noticed that at some places you use variance of fidelity, but in some other places it was like variance of an operator, right? I mean, how is that?
I see. Yeah, great question. So the shadow norm of operator O is an upper bound of the variance, regardless of the underlying quantum state. But in order to calculate this shadow norm, it's really hard. But actually, we have the calculation in the paper. It's just too long, and I don't want to use that in the talk. So instead of using the formula, we can just use the variance of the prediction as an indicator of the sample complexity.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you for the question.
All right, so I think we had lots of questions. So I think it's time to wrap up. So yeah, let's thank the speaker again. And thank you very much.
Thank you all.